I started to see that there was something deeper in how Jay saw themselves, and that they didn't feel comfortable with dressing as a boy, didn't feel comfortable with being called a boy.
And it was pretty clear, we're not pushing Jay in a certain direction. This is just unfolding.
What we've done is let Jay tell us who they are and show us who they are. And then we do whatever we can to help them be that person.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. U.S. High Court holds trans health rights hearing, Moscow cops raid gay bars to combat queer propaganda, and non-binary supportive North Carolina parents ponder escape plans. Those stories and more this week because you found This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Marcos Najera.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the 2 weeks ending December 7th, 2024. Gender-affirming healthcare for trans patients under the age of 18 was the issue before the United States Supreme Court this week. The historic December 4th hearings considered a constitutional challenge to Tennessee's ban on all pediatric transitioning treatments. The case is called U.S. v. Scrimeti, with Tennessee's Attorney General Jonathan Scrimeti as the named defendant. Challenging the ban on behalf of Tennessee families with trans children was the ACLU's Chase Strangio, the first transgender person to argue a case before the nation's highest court.
This law, we believe, is unconstitutional. And perhaps the scariest thing for all of us is that Tennessee's arguments would apply if Congress tomorrow banned this care nationally for adolescents, for adults. They claim that there are no protections based on sex for the transgender people who, like myself, who rely on this medical care.
Attorneys fighting the ban argued that it constitutes discrimination based on sex. Tennessee Solicitor General Matthew Rice said that it is not true.
Tennessee lawmakers enacted SB 1 to protect minors from risky, unproven medical interventions. The law imposes an across-the-board rule that allows the use of drugs and surgeries for some medical purposes, but not for others. Its application turns entirely on medical purpose, not a patient's sex. That is not sex discrimination.
The whole thing is imbued with sex.
Progressive Justice Elena Kagan begged to differ.
I mean, it's based on sex. You might have reasons for thinking that it's an appropriate regulation, and those reasons should be tested and respect given to them. But it's a dodge to say that this is not based on sex, it's based on medical purpose, when the medical purpose is utterly and entirely about sex.
The treatment of young trans patients with reversible puberty blockers and hormone therapies can often be life-saving, literally. That's the opinion of virtually every professional medical and mental health organization in the United States, including the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association, along with the American Academy of Pediatrics. However, the justices' questions and comments led most observers to believe that the conservative 6-3 Supreme Court majority will uphold the Tennessee ban. Justice Brett Kavanaugh and other conservatives cited the United Kingdom's discredited CAS report, which claims that pediatric gender-affirming healthcare is too risky. He also pointed to Sweden's backpedaling on the issue as a reason to say that the jury is still out on whether the benefits of puberty blockers and hormone therapy outweigh the risks.
If it's evolving like that and changing, and England's pulling back and Sweden's pulling back, it strikes me as, you know, pretty heavy yellow light, if not red light, for this court to come in, the nine of us, and to constitutionalize the whole area when the rest of the world, or at least the countries that have been at the forefront of this, are, you know, pumping the brakes on this kind of treatment because of concerns about the risks.
Kavanaugh and Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Neil Gorsuch are all Trump appointees to the court. Gorsuch famously authored the surprising 6-3 Bostock decision in 2020, the first time a ruling involving a transgender person was handed down by the court. It found that federal laws banning employment bias based on sex also protect lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender workers. However, Gorsuch was notably silent during this week's two-hour-plus hearing. U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preloger questioned the constitutionality of the Tennessee law. She asserted that transgender people should be a protected class in anti-discrimination laws.
If you're approaching this from the standpoint of saying, is this a group with a distinguishing characteristic that has no bearing on their ability to contribute and that needs some protection from the courts, I think if any group qualifies, this one does in light of the current laws and what might come in the future.
A ruling in support of the Tennessee ban would most likely validate similar bans on pediatric gender-affirming health care. They've been enacted by Republican majorities in more than a dozen other states, and some of them continue to be challenged in lower courts. A decision by the Supreme Court is not expected until next June.
The justice system in Russia can move swiftly with its so-called part of measures to combat LGBT propaganda. That's how the official state-run TASS news agency described the November 30th raids on three queer-welcoming night spots in Moscow. Seven patrons of Arma, Inferno, and Mono were soon thereafter convicted of petty hooliganism and disrupting public order, according to the press service for the Lefortovo District Court in Moscow. The defendants were charged with what was called an administrative offense, which was expressed in obvious disrespect for society, accompanied by obscene language in a public place. Raids like this have been going on sporadically since President Vladimir Putin's regime declared the non-existent international public LGBT movement to be extremists in 2023. Young men netted in the raid on the Mono night spot were handed military draft notices, per reports in local news outlet Vyortska. One of the arrested patrons is the director of a travel agency for gay men. According to the Moscow Times, he was also detained for organizing tours for members of the LGBT community.
Walmart is abandoning its policies promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. The largest retailer in the United States will no longer participate in the Corporate Equity Index of the national queer advocacy group, the Human Rights Campaign. It's the latest major U.S. multinational company to jump the DEI ship. Walmart has additionally promised to be sure that inappropriate sexual and/or transgender products are not marketed to children, according to USA Today. Items like chest binders for trans youth will disappear from the website. The term Latinx and any vestiges of what critics consider part of the woke agenda will be erased from corporate communications. Walmart's 1.6 million employees at nearly 5,000 locations in the U.S. alone will no longer receive racial equity training. Far-right social media influencer Robbie Starbuck is taking credit for this latest attack on corporate DEI programs. He's convinced a growing list of multinationals to abandon their diversity efforts. Companies like Tractor Supply, John Deere, Lowe's, Ford, Harley-Davidson, and Jack Daniels. Starbucks' victory post called Walmart's capitulation the biggest win yet for our movement to end wokeness in corporate America.
Finally, more than two dozen trans activists and cisgender allies failed to disperse while dancing to the strains of Climax's Meeting in the Ladies Room in a U.S. Capitol bathroom close to the offices of House Speaker Mike Johnson. They were protesting Republican efforts in the lower chamber to force transgender Democratic Congressperson-elect Sarah McBride of Delaware to use male bathrooms and changing rooms. Trans whistleblower Chelsea Manning was among those arrested for what they called this week's act of joyful resistance. Speaker Johnson has backed South Carolina Congressperson Nancy Mace's effort to blockade the House's first trans member. Banners displayed by supporters in the hallway declared, "Flush bathroom bigotry," and "Congress, stop f***ing on our rights." It's a different picture in the Republican-dominated Montana State House, where a bid to force a trans woman to use male facilities failed. A House committee rejected a proposal against outspoken transgender state lawmaker Zoe Zephyr in a narrow vote of 10 yes and 12 no. Zephyr celebrated the win in a social media post that read, "I'm happy to see that this proposed ban failed, and I'm grateful for my colleagues, particularly my Republican colleagues, who recognize this as a distraction from the work we were elected to do."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the 2 weeks ending December 7th, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay healthy.
And I'm Marcos Najera. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
North Carolina, love the pines around in North Carolina. Get your cares behind you, living is right in Holiday Bright, North Carolina.
North Carolina balances on the razor's edge of the U.S. political divide. It's still the Old South on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's Research Triangle Park with hundreds of high-tech companies, including Cisco, IBM, and Lenovo. Donald Trump carried the state by about 3 percentage points, but Democrats won the governor's seat and half of the top state offices. However, Republicans still dominate the legislature in a position to call the policy tune. Unfortunately, trans and non-binary youth will have to face the music. What's life like for a family living on the front lines of the culture wars?
It's a rainy November day in Raleigh, North Carolina, as I pull down a tree-lined residential street in the city of Oaks, stopping in front of a modest split-level house with a brick facade. A typical family home in a family-friendly neighborhood, not too far from an ice skating rink, a Korean barbecue restaurant, and a trampoline park where kids can play dodgeball, climb the sky ladder, or explore something called the foam zone. It's a good place to raise kids, as long as your kids meet the state's expectations for being a boy or a girl. If there are any questions, North Carolina has very fixed ideas about the answers to those questions.
This world is small, but full of things that we will never know. Answers to questions. We try to find the reason that we live and why we die, but I know what I've seen. Simple mystery.
I'm David Hunt. Republicans took control of both chambers of the North Carolina legislature in 2011, marking the first time in 140 years that the GOP had total control of the statehouse. Historically, North Carolina has been politically moderate, often electing Democrats to the governor's office, and focusing on bipartisan efforts to attract the top companies in banking, computer technology, and the life sciences. Any pretense of moderation ended April 5, 2023, when Representative Tricia Cotham, a Charlotte Democrat, switched parties, giving Republicans a veto-proof majority in both houses of the legislature. After that, it took the GOP just weeks to enact measures targeting the rights of trans and gender nonconforming youth. One law bans trans girls from competing in girls' sports. And another, the Parents' Bill of Rights, mandates that schools notify parents if their child changes their pronouns. The third measure outlaws gender-affirming health care for all children, making it a crime for doctors to prescribe puberty blockers or change any anatomical features that are typical for an individual's biological sex. It's the reason for my visit to this Raleigh neighborhood, home to a married couple, Jimmy and Megan, and their three kids. To protect the family's privacy, and frankly, their safety, we agreed not to use their last name and to refer to the kids by their first initials, M, J, and L. The kids were still in school when Jimmy met me at the front door, so the house was uncharacteristically quiet. I ditched my wet shoes in the entry, then joined Jimmy and Megan in the living room to learn about their family.
We're family five. We have three kids, a 10-year-old, 2 7-year-olds. Our oldest, our 10-year-old, is a real book lover and a smart kid, funny. And then our two younger kids are almost twins. Jay, our middle kid, is a couple months older than their little brother, who is adopted and who came to us as a baby. And so we've raised the two of them almost as twins, even though they're not quite twins.
It's a notable detail that both Jimmy and Megan emphasize when discussing their kids. The 2 7-year-olds, Jay and Elle, are growing up together, but their gender expression is dramatically different. Megan explains.
Our youngest, Elle, is such a gift in so many ways, but yeah, one of the things that having that dynamic brought to us is we had these two children 2 months apart, two babies at the same time, two toddlers at the same time, who we raised and loved the exact same way. And Elle, our youngest, who's adopted, is a stereotypical boy. He is wild, wide open, you know, wants to talk about anything roughhousing, just anything like that, right? And then Jay, you know, by the time they were 2.5, 3, you know, was saying, I'm not a brother. That was the first thing they said.
When we found out that we were having what we believed, what we understood to be a boy because of, you know, their biology, I had a lot of expectations and a lot of ideas about what that was going to be like. I love dressing Jay in sporty clothes and just kind of thought of them as my little boy moving through the world with me.
The journey took an unexpected turn about the time Jay turned 3.
If our oldest kid, M, was coordinating some imaginative play that required the two younger kids to wear tutus, they wore tutus. Jay really liked it more and wanted to do it more frequently. And I think the pandemic, honestly, was really the thing that made me see it as something deeper than just a boy child who likes to wear dresses and stuff. And But when the pandemic hit and we were all home all the time together, I started to see that there was something deeper in how Jay saw themselves and that they didn't feel comfortable with dressing as a boy, didn't feel comfortable with being called a boy.
Even just reading the same book to the two of them when they were little, and Elle, our boy and son, pointing to the male characters and identifying with them, and Jay pointing to the feminine characters and identifying with them, you know, reading the same book. So it's, I think it also honestly helped probably some of our family members not push so hard because they were watching that experiment play out. And it was pretty clear, we're not pushing Jay in a certain direction. This is just unfolding. At 2.5, I remember it was around the time we moved into this house, I was starting to just get inklings of this might be more than just wanting to wear dresses, which was fun. Little boys love to wear dresses if we let them. Most of them do. Dresses are fun. But I took Jay to their closet, and I'm always going through clothes. The children are always growing out of things. And I said, which things do you want to keep and what do you want to get rid of? We're going to go through your closet, which I do with all the kids. And Jay pulled out every single masculine piece of clothing and put it on a pile and said, these, I don't want these clothes anymore. And that was like, okay, that's pretty clear.
So there wasn't an aha moment, but it was that experience of being together all day, every day, and just seeing all of the little choices that that they'd make that wouldn't match, you know, their biological sex, and realizing that there was something really deep and different about that. I saw that I would be spending all day, every day telling my kid, you're not who you think you are, you're not who you say you are, if I didn't accept what I was seeing for what it was.
Imagine that, the dimples in your cheeks when I make you laugh. I know what I've seen when you smile at me. I know what I've seen.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt, continuing my conversation with Jimmy and Megan, a North Carolina couple raising a non-binary child in a state that has outlawed gender-affirming health care for minors. Even as a toddler, Jay, now 7, defied gender expectations. Jimmy and Megan are doing their best to support Jay, using the youngster's preferred pronouns, for example, and helping them understand the concept of gender.
They have initially talked about seeing themselves as a girl and wanting to use she, her pronouns. At this point, and for quite a while, they have said that they are non-binary, that they use they, them pronouns. They definitely present in a femme way. This is a gender journey that is pointing toward a presentation that's very different from what their biology is. From my perspective, what we've done is let Jay tell us who they are and show us who they are, and then we do whatever we can to help them be that person. Jay may end up in a place where they are non-binary. They may end up in a place where they're fully transgender. To try and live as what society understands as a girl after going through male puberty is painful, and it's damn near impossible. Things like puberty blockers, certainly, and possibly hormone replacement down the road, will be things that they need.
It just pauses things. It slows things down. It gives us more time. It gives them more time to grow, to make plans, to have discussions. You know, we really don't see any negative health side effects from this either. You know, we're reading all the things and talking to all the experts. So what we do know is when trans and non-binary kids don't get this care when they need it and want it, the suicide rate is really high. It's really high. And so it doesn't feel dramatic to me to feel like this is pretty life or death for our kid.
And all the wonders of this world I found, they mean nothing without you. And all the answers that may come from my mouth, they mean nothing without you. Without you.
The state of North Carolina does not trust Jimmy and Megan to make the most important and personal decisions about their child's health care. In the words of one legislator, parents and doctors are taking advantage of children for financial gain or other reasons.
I think citing logic behind those laws gives them too much credit. I think that they are expressions of ignorance and of a fear. All of the language written into those bills is just backfilling rationale for bigotry, to my mind.
I think most people do not care or feel that way, honestly. Like, in our personal experience, most people have been lovely to us and our family and been open to learning. But I think it's a way for them to create division and stir things up. And we are one of the easiest targets, right? Such a minority of a minority.
we're really strongly considering leaving the state and going somewhere where, you know, it's November 20th right now. There are still states where, you know, it's legal to have those therapies, and hopefully it'll remain so. You know, we'll see what happens with Trump. But yeah, we're thinking very hard about leaving, and that's really, really painful to me. I love North Carolina. I've lived here my whole life.
Fleeing North Carolina means uprooting their kids, tearing them away from the only home they've ever known, removing them from schools where they feel welcome, leaving behind people who love them, friends, grandparents, cousins, and other family. It's hard to think about.
I think a thing that boosts me or gives me hope is we've spoken with other families who have made these moves in very similar situations to us, and they tell us things like, my kid has three other non-binary kids in their class. My kid, half their school, the teachers are queer. There's rainbow flags everywhere. And so it's more than just the hormone blockers. It's not just that piece. It's like, how much are they going to see themselves and feel like they don't have to diminish themselves?
We want them all to grow up in places where they can flourish, where their own gifts and interests and abilities will determine where their lives take them, and not, I'm a certain type of person and the law won't let me be that type of person. I think we want to put them in places and positions where they can set their own course as much as possible and feel supported and safe and loved by us and by a community around them.
That used to be North Carolina, but those days are past. Seven anti-trans bills remain under consideration by the North Carolina legislature. I'd like to thank Jimmy and Megan for sharing their story. In Raleigh, North Carolina, for This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
So come on, babe, let's not waste a moment or another day with answers to questions. Let's live our lives finding a meaning of a different kind. I know what I've seen in you and me.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Correspondent David Hunt reported from Raleigh, North Carolina. The Hollies, Climax, and Logan Picture performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Brad Furr of KGAY in Palm Springs, California, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on CJAM Windsor, Ontario, KCMJ Colorado Springs, Colorado, WBDY Binghamton, New York, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.